Drawing on 40 years of published worth, Jay Rogoff's Loving in Truth, New and Selected Poems marks a milestone in his career. The volume presents over 100 poems from earlier collections alongside 47 poems previously unavailable in book form. Throughout his body of work, Jay interweaves craft and feeling as he contemplates immigrant ancestors, foreign adventures, baseball, ballet, and the uncanny entwinings of art and life. Jay Rogoff is the author of 6 previous collections of poetry, including The Art of Gravity and Venera. His poems and criticism have appeared in numerous journals, and he serves as dance critic for the Hopkins Review. It is always a pleasure to welcome our good friend Jay Rogoff to the program this morning. How are you?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing fine. Sheltering in place. I hope you're doing fine, too.
I'm well. It's very nice to have you here for a number of reasons. You know, I was talking last night to my brother, and not an unusual situation, but I was talking to him, and we were trying to come up with maybe a better word than weird to describe what we were going through right now. And I thought, oh, I know, I'll ask a poet tomorrow. I bet he may have a better word than weird, because it was the best we could come up with.
Oh, great. Well, the only thing that I can think of, offhand is really a reference, which would be Dickinsonian. I mean, suddenly we're all turned into Emily Dickinson, staying in her home all the time with the household chores to do and the household to run, but also with some opportunity to do some writing and catch up with our muses.
And with that said, as beautiful as that was, weird works too, right?
I think so, too. Yes, weird is what we use around here a lot, actually. Yeah.
Bizarre. I told you this off the air. I will tell you this on the air. I love this book. It's beautiful. It came in a very special time for me, and I just am enjoying it immensely and have enjoyed it immensely. The idea of doing both new and selected poems came to you how?
Well, this is kind of a standard thing that poets do when they reach a certain point in their career, or want to do anyway. And I was lucky enough that LSU Press was in support of the idea. About 20 years ago, I reviewed a number of books of new and selected poems, and I had a line in my introduction of that review that said something like, "With a book of selected poems, the poet begins the process of becoming the work." And now that I have a book of new and selected poems, I'm not quite sure that that's really the case. But then
what does
again,
that
I look
mean?
Through the book and I say, you know, here I am. You know, this is everything that's important to me, and this is what I've accomplished so far.
Say that quote again. I'm not sure I know what that means.
With a book of selected poems, the poet begins the process of becoming the work.
Okay.
Well, meaning, for example, when we talk about Wordsworth or we talk about Yeats, you know, we don't really mean the biographical person. We really mean the poetry that person produced and how that has lasted. And you know, you hope, writing in the privacy of your room, that you're going to produce something that will last. And I guess this is my way of saying, you know, here's what I have done so far that I would like to last, that I would like to be preserved, that I would like, you know, everybody in the world to read, of course.
So,
and buy.
Yes. For God's sakes, yes.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
So 100 poems from earlier collections, over 100. Did you select them yourself? Or you're the one who has to curate those? Meaning you want to do that?
Yeah, this is my selection, and it was an interesting process because in most of the books that I went through, it struck me pretty immediately which were the poems that I wanted to have in this volume, which were the poems that I thought were, you know, interesting but lesser that I could shunt aside. And in the earlier books, especially not the first book that I published, but the first book that I wrote, How We Came to Stand on That Shore. Poets' careers are sometimes funny that way. The order in which you write a collection is not necessarily the order in which it will be published. But for some of those early poems, I went back and really did a fair amount of revision, tweaking lines that I thought were not as good as I wanted them to be, fixing rhythms that I thought were not where I wanted them to go.
I was hoping that you could read a poem or two for us and give us an idea of some of the beautiful work in here. Where would you like to begin?
Well, actually, since I've been on the show a couple of times with some of my earlier books, I thought I'd read from some of the new and selecteds.
Okay, great.
From some of the new poems, the new poem section. The new poem section is divided in three, and I tend to write in sequences. The first book I published was, as you know, a sequence called The Cutoff, which was a sequence about baseball. And several of my other books make use of extended sequences as well. This has the new poems part has three shorter sequences, one of which is called The Penny Poems. It's dedicated to my wife because I had not written any really autobiographical poems for a long time, and I decided that it was about time that I celebrated our marriage. So Penny is a character in many of the poems. She's named in several of them, and this is a poem called The Garden. My wife is an avid gardener.
All right.
The Garden. God, says Penny, it's so much work, dividing iris, staking columbine. I'll never get it done in time. In time for what? Before it's dark. Look, already 6 p.m. and all these weeds. If I don't pluck them now, they'll overrun the flowers and tomatoes. Come help me spread grass clippings round the stems. Stumbling towards fall, the lettuce long bolted, tiger lilies toil for us, tantalizing the blurred buzz beat of the hummingbird. Green goes red as tomatoes haul their branches down to earth, plucking their leathery warmth to slice and sprinkle with good oil and a sharp splash of vinegar. She says, I haven't done enough. God, these taste so wonderful. I've really got to work next year.
That is The Garden, read and written by Jay Rogoff from the new and selected collection.
And of course, you always write about a garden, there are always echoes of the Garden of Eden from our collective Western myth, and that makes its way into the new poems section also.
What else would you like to read for us?
The second little sequence that's in this new poem section is called Side Issue, which is also a name that I got from Penny because it's about the creation of Eve. Penny said in a book one time, she's an art historian, which is great for the work. You have to travel a lot of places, and travel and works of art that really has been a major contributor to the things that I've been writing about. These are a series of strange ballads that are inspired by the Genesis carvings on the front, the facade of Oviedo Cathedral. And so I'll read most of the title poem of the sequence, which is called Side Issue. At Oviedo, adolescent Eve emerges, born 15 and set to blossom. God omniscient sees men fall for younger women. God's left hand perfects her shoulder. Adam sleeps, his arms crossed, hiding his physique. He's older, possessed of a more manly chest. Eve's magnetized by God's stark stare, drawing her body and making her cock her head his way. She puts on power, a splash of aphrodisiac. There they parley eye to eye. Her right hand worries the humble ground, while her left hand strums her thigh. Like God's, her cunning hair is curled. She notices how God's divine manlike thigh distends his robe. She falls for him. She will for man as well, in microcosmic love. Stare gone blank, adoring God who beams upon her sunning face. She dabbles her toes in Adam's side. She'll dapple blood through paradise. Two angels troll across the blue. One asks if it's a good idea, this bone girl hot for deity. The other's face is hacked away. And of course, we're looking at a sculpture. We're looking so that's the destruction that's been wreaked upon these images over the years.
What we're going through right now, is that good or bad for yourself and for a poet, do you think? In the sense that there's so much of this is inspired by travel, by seeing things, the arts, And the idea that the data is not accessible to us, I mean, obviously we have, you know, we have trips of our past, but I just wonder of what sort of mood it puts you in.
Yeah, it's a funny question for me because I actually have not been writing much poetry lately, but ideally it should be a time in which you can bring back things that you have experienced, as you were saying, and start in. Wordsworth called poetry emotion recollected in tranquility, and maybe it's the fact that we don't have a lot of tranquility, even though that we have an enforced time in which we have to be by ourselves. In general, it takes me a long time between the witnessing of something and my writing about it. I envy poets who, you know, now are publishing in the New Yorker poems about everybody's isolation during this crisis that we're going through during the virus. That's not really something I can do, although I keep thinking of and jotting down ways of possibly approaching it. I'm struck by the images of the empty cities, and because I have in the planning stage and with a couple of hundred lines written, an idea for a longish poem that is about cities, I think that will end up being an important contributor to what I'm working on. But I just don't know when that will turn into poetry yet.
You mentioned tranquility. Is that a key ingredient of having yourself in a tranquil state and being able to immerse yourself in the work, into the language, into the art, into the form?
Yeah, for me, yes. My most productive times have come when I've been able to have you know, a room to myself and not been interrupted by you know, traumas of daily life or anything extraordinary. So that's another thing that's kind of gnawing at me right now, the fact that we're not really in a very tranquil time. Yeah, so that does become important.
When you looked to put these together, and I want to go back to an earlier question when I was asking about the selection of the 100 or so, is that difficult? I've seen and heard about that process from other poets. Some you put them on, we'll actually, you know, take real copies of them, put them on the ground, and sort of put them in piles and all kinds of things. How do you go about doing that, of refining that list?
Yeah, that was something I largely did. Well, I think I made photocopies of the contents pages of all the books and went through, you know, ticking off the ones that I wanted to have in the book, and then I went to the poems themselves and see if they hung together, see if this would be a fair representation of the book, and see if of each individual book, and see if those were the poems I genuinely wanted to preserve. So no, I didn't do anything quite so physical as laying out things along the floor. That I did on the computer, which was a little strange for me also, because I write longhand. I like to use a fountain pen and a pad of legal paper to write poems upon. The feeling of the nib on the texture of the paper is something that's very important to me.
I'm going to satisfy two things in asking this question. One is to name drop, but I was I was talking to the novelist Ann Tyler recently. Mm-hmm. In fact, she is going to be our guest on the book show after 31 years of trying to get her on the show. And I believe this is only her second radio interview ever. She will be on our show on Tuesday. She talked about the process of writing a novel. And one of the things that she does is exactly what you just said. She writes longhand. Then, mm-hmm. as she is, before she's typing it in, she told me that she will read it aloud, that she wants to know that how it sounds to the ear, especially with dialogue, but not only for dialogue. Given your beautiful reading, I'm interested in how that plays a part.
Yeah, reading aloud is essential. My poems are very often driven by sound. In fact, if we have time, there's one more poem I'd like to read that I came up with the idea because of the sounds. when I was very young, I used to tape my poems and play them back and figure out what was going wrong with them. But now I trust my ear enough that I can just do it reading aloud. But the way the words feel in the mouth and the way the words sound on the ear are equally important to your trying to accomplish something.
I believe we do indeed have time for one last poem, Jay.
Okay, this is a poem called Where. It's the last poem in the book, and it really began just by playing with the word where, its meanings and its sound, and it took me in directions that I didn't expect. Where? The birds wear air, and the fish wear water. Once we knew the soul wore matter, but now no matter, the soul wears down. The duckling's down, lets it wear water in wearying weather. The weather wears the sun's fire that warms the earth in its wrap of air. Earth wears the moon, and the moon wears water, pulling the tides from their coastal harbor and wearing them down upon the sand, where the tides wear land, where we wore each other like winter clothing. We watched our breath, and into the ground we wore each other, honeymooners on a train squabbling over the lower berth. Christ, how can you lie, my darling, naked under cover in the winter, wearing earth?
It's beautiful. It is Where, from New and Selected Poems, Loving in Truth, which is just out from the LSU Press. Jay Rogoff, you're the best. Thank you so much for being with us.
Joe, thank you so much for having me. This was a great pleasure.